It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. While many people in neighboring Pennsylvania are not opposed to fracking, some want to see a ban.
Southwestern Pennsylvania has had a legacy of trading their lives for their jobs. We are at a point in southwestern Pennsylvania where we know better, we need to do better.
We'll hear more about it on this West Virginia morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. The future of fracking for natural gas will be a key campaign issue in 2020, which is one reason President Trump has twice visited Western Pennsylvania to promote the industry this year. But as 90.5 WESA's Chris Potter reports, the issue can fracture coalitions in both parties.
Franklin Park is both rustic and upscale, graced with million-dollar homes, state game lands, and large flightless birds, as I learned while driving with Matt Ferriolo.
I get a sense that it's changed, even just in the last 10 years, just in the time that I've been here.
Is that an ostrich? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so there's a farm here with an ostrich and a pig. That was a farm. We just passed.
Democrats like Ferriolo are rare birds here, too. Franklin Park is staunchly Republican, but he recruited three other Democrats to join him in running for borough council this fall. The central issue? The current council's openness to gas drilling beneath the borough's Lynbrook Park.
What we felt was that we were on the right side of history and that we wanted to protect this place.
Walking uphill to Lynbrook Park's playing fields, he says that when neighboring economy borough allowed drilling nearby, his community's character was at risk.
It would be a referendum on drilling in an area that is beautiful. It would affect our health. It would affect the whole reason why people live here.
The gas industry says drilling is safe and environmentally friendly. But while Ferriolo narrowly lost his race, his three fellow Democrats won, thanks to aggressive door-knocking and outreach. Fracking debates often hurt Democrats because the issue divides the party's base. Many environmentalists worry about drilling's impact on air and water quality. But projects like the massive ethane cracker plant being built in Beaver County employ union members. So when Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto recently said he opposed more investment by the petrochemical industry, Republicans seized the moment. Here's Sam DeMarco, who heads the GOP in Allegheny County, blasting Peduto at a political event.
He wants to halt growth. He sounds like Pol Pot declaring zero, the year zero, in Cambodia. Tonight, I'm telling union workers that we're on their side.
Darren Kelly, the region's top union official, called it, quote, hard to believe Peduto opposed creating thousands of jobs. Kelly says there must be more dialogue between environmentalists and labor. But while he doubts union workers will buy Republican overtures, he says Peduto's remarks didn't help.
It takes a hell of a lot more than agreeing with us on the natural gas industry to say that you're a friend of organized labor. But I think it gave them a platform, and that's what I don't like.
Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald is a Democrat who supports drilling. He says voters may not want wells in their backyard, but many do support the lower gas prices and jobs that fracking brings. Fitzgerald worries a drilling ban, which some Democratic presidential candidates support, could cost Dems in swing states like Pennsylvania.
I think an extreme position on that issue, I think, really puts those states in jeopardy.
A poll by the Kaiser Family Foundation shows that 57% of Pennsylvania swing voters think a ban on fracking is a bad idea. Opposition is even stronger around Pittsburgh. But pollster Ashley Kurtzinger says voters also expressed growing concern about the environment, and few said fracking was a do-or-die issue.
While we have majorities of Pennsylvania voters saying that a ban on fracking is a bad idea, very few of them say that if a candidate disagreed with them on this issue, that there would be no chance that they would vote for them.
In fact, several local candidates, from county councilors like Bethany Hallam to state representatives Sarah Inamorato and Summer Lee, have won elections while expressing doubts about fracking. Megan McDonough says there's more to come. She's an activist with Food and Water Watch who's helped local municipalities limit drilling.
Southwestern Pennsylvania has had a legacy of trading their lives for their jobs. We are at a point in southwestern Pennsylvania where we know better, we need to do better.
But as Matt Ferriolo and I discovered while driving to the well site that launched his campaign, the gas industry has dug in deep.
Look, here's a sign. They're moving earth and they've cut down trees, and this is where the well pad's going to be. They've done all this work just in the last few months.
For State Impact Pennsylvania, I'm Chris Potter.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. It's 7:48. Forecasters say some mountain areas of West Virginia could get up to a foot of snow between now and tomorrow afternoon. The National Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning for portions of 8 eastern counties from early today through early tomorrow. Strong wind gusts could accompany the storm. The warning area includes parts of Fayette, Grant, Nicholas, Pendleton, Pocahontas, Randolph, Tucker, and Webster counties. And the National Weather Service is saying that perhaps up to a foot of snow could fall in the ski areas. Support for this weather forecast is provided by Jaeger Airport, CRW, West Virginia's gateway to the world. More at JaegerAirport.com. Across Appalachia and even rural America more broadly, hospitals are closing. Faced with increasing costs and aging, sicker, and poorer patients, healthcare systems are consolidating their services and, in the process, increasing travel times for patients seeking specialized and emergency care. Reporter Mason Adams recently dug into the impacts these changes are having on Appalachian communities in a piece for In These Times. He spoke with 100 Days in Appalachia's student editor, Kristen Uppercue, about his reporting.
Your report details the challenges rural Americans, especially those that are older than 65, face when trying to access healthcare services. Some of the biggest challenges you write about include the impact of hospital closures, but that's not necessarily a new issue. Outlets throughout the region have been covering this issue. Was there anything you found in your reporting for this article that was new to you or that you thought was surprising?
Well, first, I agree. You're right. A lot of these issues have been around for a little while. I've reported on some of them myself. What I hadn't done before this report was to really see them stacked up in one story, all these different layers from access to cost to transportation. And so seeing that in a complex, layered way was something new to me. You know, something else I hadn't gotten into too much before, I had thought about the emergency transportation side of it. I hadn't thought about birth services so much. You know, one of the interviews and the first person I quoted in the story had quadruplets that came 3 months early, and she had to drive an hour to get to neonatal intensive care unit, which is where you need to go if you have a high risk pregnancy or your babies need to stay over, as hers did. I think today, with some of the changes that have been made to the hospital systems, she'd have been driving an hour and a half, which boggles my mind. But something else that came up in this was just the prevalence of these issues. I kind of got started on it because I heard stories about these $44,000 helicopter bills, and I had trouble finding people who had that experience and were willing to talk about it, I think in part because they signed non-disclosure agreements when they settle. But it seemed like everybody I talked to had a story about it.
So your story is centered around a nonprofit healthcare provider that bought up services in a rural community, consolidated into one organization, and then downgraded those services. You write that this is a trend that we're seeing in the region. Can you explain in a little bit more detail what exactly is happening?
Essentially, in Northeast Tennessee and Southwestern Virginia, there were two competing healthcare providers, Wellmont and Mountain States. And by 2014, both of them had just covering a rural area with that's increasingly losing population, and the population's older. Poorer and tends to be, you know, sick. They're dealing with things like black lung and not to mention chronic, you know, illnesses like diabetes and heart conditions. So they merged under a process called a certificate of public advantage or a cooperative agreement. The resulting entity, Ballad Health, basically had all of Mountain States and Wellmont's assets. And some of the, you know, like I said, these had been two competing healthcare systems. So they ended up with things like two hospitals in Norton, which is a city in southwestern Virginia of about 4,000 people. And so, you know, as you'd expect, they're looking at that larger system and looking for ways to make it more efficient. Now, some of the changes that they've made have really upset people who are in that coverage area. At the same time, you know, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has done a study that found basically hospital consolidation and these monopolies see price increases. And so we're still in the early years of this ballot procedure or this ballot entity. So there's still a lot to learn.
We know that Appalachia is a region that's struggling with many health issues. The rates of diabetes, of heart disease, of cancer, they're all high here. After doing this reporting, and this might be an obvious question, but do you feel like you can say that the financial climate of rural healthcare is impacting the health of the people here?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's true not just in Appalachia, but across America, especially rural America. I mean, that's just speaking from firsthand experience, you know, I'm one of the many, many Americans who's basically one healthcare crisis away from financial disaster. Like, we're doing okay, but if we were to, you know, suffer an unexpected issue, you know, I think we'd be in financial trouble. And I think a lot of people are that way. They, you know, and will let small things go just because they know it's going to come with a bill, maybe, and often one they can't afford. I mean, even co-pays, you know, you can see that play out if you look at the local courts, where Ballot is certainly not the only company. They're one of many healthcare providers that will pursue patients for bills in court. You know, they go after them to enable them to chase the debt more aggressively, and then they start to garnish wages. And yeah, it's I think it's a challenge for a lot of Americans and Appalachians.
So with those challenges and the challenges that you've reported on before, are there any solutions out there? Are there ways to make healthcare more accessible and more affordable in Appalachia?
That's a good question. A lot of folks are trying different things. There are clinics that have gone out and really made a difference. Like a few people made a point to me that, you know, just having a registered nurse or a nurse practitioner who can see people at a spot and help them maintain their long-term chronic conditions like diabetes or heart issues. That's super important. Ballot itself is focused on a lot of community health issues, you know, helping support parks and rec and things that get people outside to exercise, helping support healthy eating patterns. I certainly saw Ballot trying to engage on that level, and that's something we don't always think about, but it does make a difference in community health. And then you have more, I guess, more political solutions are looking at changing the healthcare and healthcare system in more fundamental ways. You know, I talked to some people for this story that made a case that moving to a single payer system for healthcare will take the profit motive out of it. And if you can do that, then maybe you can kind of make a more level playing field, both for providers but also patients across the U.S. instead of into this system of winners and losers of have and have not healthcare providers that we currently have now.
That was Mason Adams speaking with 100 Days in Appalachia's Kristen Uppercue. Read Mason's full report at inthesetimes.com. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Chuck Anzalevich.